Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to After Work Drinks, your twice weekly dose of news, pop culture and Pinot Noir, brought to you by magazine editors and best friends Isabel Truman and Grace O'Neill.
Hello everybody, welcome to week 1 trillion of quarantine and week 3 of After Work Drinks dinner parties.
I know, are you sick of us yet? Because I'm sick of these Zoom calls every day of my life. Jokes.
They either have to be like really late at night or first thing in the morning for one of us, so we just can't go to sleep or go to bed without having done a Zoom call.
I know. And then either one of us is drunk and one of us is incredibly sober.
Is stone cold sober, yeah. So it's an interesting mix.
So on the agenda this week, our first dinner party guest is Georgia Curry, who is the founder of renowned New Zealand fashion label Georgia Alice. Georgia launched her brand in 2012, and she's since gone on to be one of the country's most renowned designers. Everyone in New Zealand, everyone in the Australian fashion industry owns something by Georgia. She makes such incredible, well-made clothes. Also, Rosie Huntington-Whiteley is obsessed with it. She can't go like 2 days without wearing one of Georgia's designs, and countless other celebrities. She stocked on Net-a-Porter. But even better than all of that, she's an amazing, kind and generous woman. Despite being a new mother and in the middle of the biggest test of her business since its launch, Georgia gave us her Friday night wholeheartedly and read us synopsis from the back of books. All night long.
From several books. And then we have Tilly Lawless, who is just this incredible local force of nature that we've wanted to talk to for a very long time. She's an Australian sex worker, activist and writer. She's given TED Talks. She's appeared on documentaries for the ABC. She became an international sensation in 2015 when she launched the viral hashtag Faces of Prostitution movement. And she's just basically an incredibly eloquent, interesting, well-rounded, amazing feminist icon.
Love her. Then it's over to Isabella Farrell, who's a New York-based actress, model, and the host of the cooking show Chow Bella. She is hilarious. She's one of our favorite people on Instagram. She's basically our muse, and she is one of my friends from New York who we got on the show to talk all things basically food, Instagram, and pandemic life. So enjoy.
Yes, please enjoy, rate, review, and subscribe, and we will see you again on Wednesday.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello.
Hello.
I have 2 glasses of champagne in case I run out of this one.
Perfect. I said to Lewis to expect text messages if I run out.
Yes, perfect.
I've done that before.
I'm actually doing this from bed, but I've got a gown on.
Oh my god. Ooh. That's very like aspirational work from home.
I know.
Yes. Should we start talking pod?
Yeah. Yeah, let's start talking pod.
How are you taking it in terms of the, like, how's the Georgia Ellis side of things going.
Yeah.
Your house business.
House business. it's kind of weird because I haven't been able to meet in person with my business advisor. And generally I'm much better in person. We can kind of nut ideas out, look at profit and loss, look at balance sheets, plan the financial year ahead. And we're in the middle of kind of wrapping last financial year at the moment, and we can't get into the studio to do a stock take. So it's kind of this weird thing of being like, I know, you know, like market's cancelled, so we're not traveling in June anymore. We wouldn't have had a collection ready anyway because we've lost this time, which we would normally be working on the range. So we're like, do we push it to September? And so the cogs in the business are shifting. And I don't feel like I can give like a proper idea to anyone about what's going to happen, because I'm frozen in like a thing, because we're in this kind of lockdown. And so like I can look at numbers and I can kind of do projections and all of these things, but until there is sort of like a sense of normality and I can get back into the studio and we're sampling and I can see all my team, other, you know, rather than just being on a call like we're on, I feel like I can't even really make bigger decisions that need to be made. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And it's also like the whole thing, like the dichotomy of being a fashion designer is obviously always that the essence of your job is creativity, because that's what people want from you, and that's what is being good at your job. But then like you cannot be creative in a vacuum, and there needs to be a business around it. And then like an unforeseeable event like this would just quash the creativity, I would imagine, because it's just anxiety inducing and whatever. And then the business side is then the thing you have to deal with. I don't know, I just feel like that would be really difficult.
It's really like for a while in Georgia Ellis anyway, I had kind of definitely in the last 6 months been like, this fashion industry needs to change. Mm. You know, like I go through cycles of burnout where I'm like, okay, I'm working on this new collection, and then it
stops. There's so much. It's just like never stop.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, for me, getting to a point where I was like, I can only come into the studio 2 days a week, because mentally I was on the brink of having a mental breakdown, to be perfectly honest. That was right after London, basically. And then COVID happened, which just like pushed me deeper into like feeling pretty bad. But then I don't know what it is, but having the time, the forced time, and also knowing, like you said, that everyone else in the world is going through it, and a lot of people are in far worse positions. It's given me a chance to be really like, if I wasn't 100% happy, like, don't get me wrong, Georgia Ellis is great and I love it so much, but if it's not exactly as I want it to be, and I don't feel like I've had the time to make those changes that I know I need to make for myself, for my team, and for the wider good of the universe and the planet, and, you know, the sustainability issues and all of that stuff, if I haven't had the time to do that, then this whole lockdown has just given me an opportunity to be like, I need to make changes. And so I've got this new kind of sense of like purpose and motivation moving forward, of it not just being this weird fashion cycle anymore. Like, what do I want GA to be? And I've got...
And that's the thing, like, that's with us as well, with writing. If we ever wrote a story and we were getting pushed for deadline when we knew it could be way better than it was, we knew if we just interviewed one more person, that would make the whole story completely different. If we had an extra day on it, it would make the change. Like, you just don't feel proud of it. You don't even want to put it out there, and it just feels like such a waste. And that's the first time when you saying that I've thought of it from a designer's perspective, having these crazy deadlines, having so many different collections a year, having so many different showings, all of these time frames you have to stick to as a creative. It's like, if it's not done by then and you're having to force it out and then also release it to the world, and I saw you posting about sustainability and the earth and everything today. It's like today. Then everything just feels like so much more of a waste. You're like, well, fuck.
Yeah. And I think, you know, even that when I put that out today on my Instagram, because I was sitting there going, okay, well, I want to be more, I can't even say the word sustainable.
I know. So yeah. Don't get me started. It's just throwing around
but
crazy.
I want to be a more conscious brand, but I'm feeling really confused. I find it to be really murky and unclear on how to go about it. And so it was really interesting putting that out and getting the responses that I got, because for the first time, like, all of the little things that I feel, you know how you have like gut feelings? And I've never really spoken to anyone about them, but all of the gut feelings that I've had in terms of that kind of side to fashion, I was just getting all of these responses, and it's just confirmed to me some of the ideas that I had in my head. And so it's been so positive today because of that.
Good.
Like, you know, young women and men who are messaging me who are so, so wanting things to be better, but are also aware of the complications and the complexities of sustainability in fashion. And that it isn't just like this blanket term that makes someone good and someone bad. It's like, you know, the whole point of, you know, a t-shirt takes 2,200 and something liters of water to make.
Crazy.
It doesn't matter if it's organic cotton or non-organic cotton, it's the same.
Yeah, right.
There's just so many clothes in the world.
It's too crazy. Much stuff. This is the thing that I think it comes down to at the end of the day. How you make it, I think if you make it well and you like reduce the waste in how you make it, but you're still making like fucking 50,000 of them, it doesn't matter, you know? And this is the thing that's so difficult with brands, because I think designers are all aware of this, and designers are all like, I would rather have a kind of small, maybe twice yearly collection, or just a base collection that things get added to or that get built on or whatever. But to do that means to like step outside of the system, which makes their business model viable.
Yeah.
It's
difficult.
So complicated. Yeah. It's
yeah. And like Fashion Week, how you putting that down a runway at Paris Fashion Week, but only having 10 items. Like,
yeah.
I just feel like when we were there, when we were just at Paris and Milan Fashion Week, that was the main thing we were talking about. At the end of every single show, I was like, beautiful, but we just saw that exact same really nice long leather jacket in every single show we went to. There was a different variation. There was a different variation of every single thing. And I was just like, God, there's just so much stuff.
And this is what my points that I kind of took away from that small little exercise today was, as consumers, we need to be a moving force in the industry as well. So like, instead of like buying something all the time, and I think it's more of a fast fashion issue, that's where it needs to stop. Like, we need to stop buying fast fashion firstly, and then it's like holding on to our garments. Like, I had this lady message me, and she had her daughter in her grandmother's kimono. You know, she's Japanese, and she was like, my daughter is in my grandmother's kimono, and I will keep this for my grandchildren. And she was like, you know, if things are special, you can keep them for a really long time. I think that's the scary but also amazing thing that I learned today, was that my business might take a massive hit revenue-wise and my profits might go back to what they were 5 years ago, but I actually don't care, because I want to feel good about what I'm doing and I want to feel authentic about my existence. I want to feel authentic in it. I hope you can't. Can you hear my dog snoring?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I thought it was Earl. I thought it was Earl. And so I was like, this is cute, because we'll just be like, George's baby was snoring all the way through.
We cannot ask her to move her child.
It's my stinky bulldog. I'll kick him out. I'll kick her out. I can't actually believe I haven't really properly spoken to anyone for a month.
It's easily done.
And like, I'll get caught, lots of texts from friends, people who I genuinely care about, like you, and being like, call me tomorrow, you know, and me being like, of course, I'll call you tomorrow. And then I just don't.
I've had to do like a redemptive thing yesterday where I messaged like 9 people that I'd really neglected, and now I've just crammed them all into this weekend, which is fucking crazy. So,
which is exactly what I do, and then I end up getting overwhelmed, and before I even have one call, I'm like, I'm canceling all of them again.
Yeah, same.
Terrible. I don't know what that is.
I don't know what it is either, because I was trying to figure it out, because I was like, I get sometimes I have friends in my messenger where seeing them is like, like I compared it to my friend who was like, what the fuck is up with you? And I was like, I feel like it's like an unpaid bill. And I feel the more I see it, the more anxious it makes me. So the more I ignore it. And then all of a sudden it becomes this big thing instead of just this little thing. And they're like, just be like, hey, I'm busy. But I'm like, I can't do that.
Yeah. Do you know what the worst one is that I've ever done?
Yeah.
So obviously I had a midwife who has had more impact on me than probably any female I've had in my life, because she was so incredible during my birth and in the aftermath, which, by the way, is far harder than labor and being pregnant. Breastfeeding sucks. Anyway, and I, like, didn't get her a present, and it's now been 15 months. No, because...
Do people usually get them presents?
15 months?
Well, you know, like, for someone who's had such an impact on me, beyond like being a mother and being able to care for Earl when he was born and get myself through the labor and help me with all the stuff around that, she was like a really incredible woman to have in my life external to all of that. And I feel like she really changed everything for me. And do you know what it was? It was like, I tried writing a letter. I think I've got like 50 attempts in my bedside drawer of like trying to get out from my brain how much this woman impacted me. And I just couldn't do a good enough job. And then I put pressure on, like, trying to find a present for her. And then I got so overwhelmed and too much for me.
I do this all the time.
That I put it into, like, a thing where I just have ignored it. And I now, this is a relationship with a woman that I feel like, you know, I would have liked to have continued and, like, text her and been like, how's everything going? Like, had any cool birth stories lately? Or, like, you know, how's life? And I feel like I can't even, like, reach out anymore, because I feel so guilty for being like not being able to communicate how amazing she is.
Yeah, but it's just a silly thing where you get in your head. I think something's really that I find really interesting as well is that there's like love languages that you have in your romantic relationships, but I think love languages more so for me apply to friendships, where I'm like, the way I even receive love in a friendship is like, my love language is just words. That's it. So I don't need people to show up for me. I don't need them to give me birthday presents. I don't need them to do activities with me. I don't need them to remember dates. I just need them to be like, you're great. Or like, you're doing well. Or like, I love you. Or like,
words of affirmation.
Blah. Yeah, that's literally
words of affirmation.
If my friend sent me that like once a week, I would be like set. Whereas for other people, their love language is like activities together, turning up for things, doing like gift giving, all of this stuff. And it's like, you have to be aware that just because it's not your love language doesn't mean that theirs isn't valid, and like shift and cater to them. Like that I hadn't thought about it recently. I thought about it in my relationship, but not in friendships. And I think it's really important.
Same. I haven't thought about it in friendships either. Like in my relationship with Lou, I know exactly our dynamic, and you kind of just roll with it and you figure it out. But I hadn't thought about it in that way before, with just like regular friends.
Me either. What do you think? I can't think of what mine would be in friendships. Do you know what mine is in a friendship, Grace? Mine's probably like,
I think you do, like, you're a very, like, I don't know if it's acts of service, but you're like a very giving person, where you're like, but you'll bring someone coffee or like buy them some like nice food or bring them a gift or come to their house. And
whenever I do the test, it says that mine's gifts. And so I'm always like, God, that makes me sound so superficial, because it sounds like I want gifts, but it's more that I like giving.
Yes. And it's like a physical representation of how you feel about someone, because you put in time and thought and effort and whatnot. And that's how I feel about crafting a nice message to someone. Like, if it's someone's birthday, I'll sit and spend like an hour on it, and I care like so much about the words being perfect. Whereas they'll just be like, okay, thanks.
And I feel like, Grace, I'm really similar. And I feel like that's why I find it difficult to have kind of like, you know, like if someone texts me and is like, and are like, how are you going? Often I'm so busy that I can't even really register or look at it or think too much about it because I want to be able to reply in a really like thoughtful, and it takes time and effort to reply, but it just ends up sitting there. And then it becomes this really overwhelming, almost project type thing.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, you just put so much value in words that you feel like every word you say has to have like this huge emotional weight behind it. Like I remember talking to my friend and she was like, I don't care if my boyfriend says I love you. Like it's completely irrelevant to me. I was like, oh. And she was like, I don't care if he says I'm pretty. I don't care if he says he loves me. I don't care about that. I just care about him like turning up, like doing his fair share of housework, coming to stuff with my family. Like that's to me the only thing that matters. And I just couldn't even get my brain around that.
I feel more like that as well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, never would need someone to say those things to me. Like if I said I love you and he didn't say I love you too, I'd be like, well, that's fucking weird.
But you don't need them to just say like, it.
No.
Words of affirmation, like, are so important to kind of know, because I'm quite, I like pick up on vibes from people, or at least I think I can.
Same, actually. I need like reassurance.
Yeah. So if I'm left in like a zone of being like, I'm getting this real kind of like feeling from you, and there aren't words to kind of like alleviate or explain a situation, it's too much for me. And I think even in social situations, if I'm shy or feeling a little insecure, or, you know, it's a party and I don't know half the people, I'll generally overcompensate in a way that I become even more extrovert to try and make everyone feel really comfortable so that I kind of get it back or something.
Yeah, totally.
I'm like that. Yeah, same.
And you say, I feel like when you're like that, you're very good at like making it really good educated guess about what people want to hear. And you kind of just parrot things back to them because you're like, okay, if we're having a conversation, then they like me. And if they like me, that's good. So, like, I can just kind of figure out what the thing is. We've been seen. It's hard because I don't think it's a bad, it's like necessarily a bad thing, but it can be a bad, like, caring too much about being liked, I think, can be a really bad thing that I'm trying to deal with. But
yeah same. And like, actually, it's exhausting.
So exhausting
trying to like, one, make people feel really comfortable all the time, where actually it's something I want to instill in Earl as he grows up, is that feeling uncomfortable isn't, just because it makes you feel a certain way, isn't necessarily a bad feeling. And that, like,
I agree.
It's not your job to, it's your job to be kind and thoughtful and move throughout your world with really good intent, but it's not your job to try and like make people feel comfortable. And like, if your opinions are different to others, that's a good thing, because that's where then it becomes a challenge, and that's how humans learn from each other, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the key thing to remember for me, is like, instead of trying to like make things really smooth for everyone else all the time, that actually, if I am just myself, people will either love me or, you know, or they won't. And who wants people around who don't love you 100% anyway, or get on with you? Or
I think when you're young and you're in primary school and high school, all you want to do is fit in. And all you want to do is fit in and be like everyone else and be the same as everyone else. And then as soon as you get to university, you realize that every single person who's different is what is the person that everyone loves. Like every person who's just themselves and who just is a little bit weird and a little bit wacky and has different quirks and dresses differently and likes this shit that no one else has heard of, those are the people that everyone is drawn to and everyone loves. But when you're in high school, you're trying so hard to beat every sense of individuality out of yourself to fit in with everyone else around you. It's so weird. I remember getting to uni and being like, oh, all of the shit that like, exactly how I would be if I wasn't trying to be like everyone else is how everyone would
what
like
makes
me so much
you. It's what makes you go. It's crazy, isn't it?
And you're like, how did those people in high school have the like resilience of character to just be themselves? You know how there were just those people that you feel like just came out as themselves and they just never like got affected by all the shit in the world telling them to change? I was like, God, I just wish I fucking had that.
So. Yeah, I know. And I think like since having a kid, it's even more like, oh my God, like he's going to go to school. Like, is he going to get teased? What if he gets bullied? What would I say to him? What if he's the bully? What if he's mean to people? Like, and I think like you know, I want to be able to instill like really nice things in him so that he can be a beautiful person, right?
Mm.
But then I have this like complex kind of thought where I'm like, I have no control. Like he came out of me and then I have to just like, goodbye. Sending like you're your own person. And actually, Izzy, like coming back to what I was saying when you know, went through that really awful breakup and it was really difficult for you. If someone had said to you, don't do that, don't do this, don't date him, and then you didn't experience the hardship, you wouldn't learn. And so you can't actually wrap kids in cotton wool and expect them not to experience things because that's where the best lessons come from. But at the same time, all you want to do is protect them or your friends or, you know.
Yeah. It must be such a hard one as a mother because you're just like, I can't handle seeing my little baby get hurt. Yeah.
And it's the whole thing of like, I don't even really feel like myself I've worked it out. Even for me as a human woman, I don't feel like I've figured out what, you know, I'm not a completely perfect person. And so I feel, you know, like obviously Earl wasn't planned. He was a beautiful surprise gift from the universe.
And I met him in your belly when he was 10 weeks old.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God, you did.
Yeah. It was so cute. And you were so sick. And I was bringing you wet face cloths in bed while you were all vommy.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's so cute and special. Like, it's actually so, I was thinking that before when you were talking, I was like, it's so crazy how that feels like it was just yesterday when you were lying in the bed holding your stomach being like, don't tell anyone, but I'm in the really early stages of pregnancy. And now here.
I was like,
feels like no time has passed.
Oh my God, it's so, so traumatic. Sick.
I was like, get in the Uber. We need to go and get falafel. Georgia was like, had her head hanging out the side of the Uber.
But worth it for the falafel.
Oh, totally.
Well, it's the same place we went.
I was going to say, I think about that place like multiple times a week. It's so fucking good.
Yeah.
When you guys emailed me and were like, we need a dinner party topic, I was like,
we really freaked people out with the dinner party topics. I think it was a bad move on our part.
I was like, I'm so uninteresting. I was like, I'm the most boring person on the planet. All I do is work and then hang out with my son and Lou and then I just go to bed.
Same. I know, we freaked everyone out. Like our other guest on this week, a girl called Tilly, she was like, God, I don't really attend that many dinner parties. It sounds very fancy and I'm not sure what to say. And we were like, oh fuck, we literally meant just like,
we just meant like when you get drunk with like a bunch of your friends and then you just get onto this topic and then you just
so my dinner party topic would be literally would have been like the fact that Matthew McConaughey's on a sleep app and now I want to fuck him. That would have been it.
Yeah.
I reckon Matthew McConaughey, but also, do you know who else I have a crush on in the celebrity realm?
Who?
Oh, let's play a guessing game.
Yeah.
Okay, so if it was the 90s, this guy would be the same kind of type as like a Johnny Depp, Leonardo DiCaprio. He's kind of like the new...
But is he there? Oh, so he's the new one.
Timothy. Okay.
I was going to say, is he their era?
Yes.
Timothy. Is he? Loves him too. Yeah. Good choice.
Yeah. Love him.
Oh my God. I'm so obsessed Chalamet. With him.
He's like the Johnny, kind of new Johnny guy. But then I love that he's such a soft boy.
Oh yeah. He's way more, he's not like feminine. Typical hot either.
Yeah. Yeah. So my guy... we just sound so old. It's so funny. We're like, has anyone heard of this new young guy called Timothy Chalamet? And then I'm about to say, I literally last year discovered, this is so insane, but I just discovered who Harry Styles was in terms of how cool he is and charming he is. And I know he's, and you already knew he was stylish and quite hot, but I'm just like, you are just everything. You're just perfect.
I can't. I know.
You're to me. He is literally perfect. You're like, not only gorgeous, universe. But you're stylish and charming and English and nice.
And so stylish, like crazy.
Lou, my partner, got me his record that has the posters in it. You know, his big posters. And yes, I was like, yes. I want to put them up on the wall.
Oh,
and
wait, he's naked in one of them, right?
Yeah, he's kind of like covering his willy and coming out of a vagina or a heart or something.
Yes. I saw him show that on Ellen when I was YouTubing every single video he's ever been in.
I've already done it. I reckon it is.
I did that recently.
I know more about Harry Styles than Harry Styles knows about Harry Styles.
Same.
He is divine. Mm. And his album is actually fucking good.
Insanely good. It's so good. That was my breakup album, Georgia.
Oh, lucky you.
Falling. Yeah, that song, Falling, literally, was just the one. Oh, my God. And I'd be on the fucking train
I also really love his song, Cherry.
Yeah.
It has his ex-girlfriend kind of like talking at the end.
Cool, cool. And his ex-girlfriend's just the coolest, hottest thing in the world as well, which makes him even hotter.
Finger monkey,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. And then she just broke up with him and now goes out with this billionaire art dealer who's also fucking hot and she just doesn't care about Harry Styles. I'm like, God.
Oh my God. I haven't even researched this. Who is this guy? Yeah,
so she goes out with this guy called Theo Narcus or something, and his parents own like the biggest art collection in the world. So that's why in Cherry or one of the songs he goes, does he take you walking around his parents' gallery? That's
wow.
So yeah, and then she just doesn't give a fuck about Harry because I think it sounds like he cheated on her.
Yeah, because he said something about wandering hands.
Yes, he did.
Oh my God, you too.
We got it. We're going to release a spin-off podcast with Harry Styles.
You should do a spin-off where you just, like, break down every song on the album and, like, exactly what it means.
I would love to do that. I just think he's just too good. You know, like, that picture of him wearing the, I think it's Lanvin men's vest that has the sheep.
Yeah.
The sheep all over it.
Yeah.
And it's, like, an homage to Princess Diana. She wore a really similar jumper. It's just too much.
I'm just like, I know.
Okay, let's get onto a podcast question quickly in terms of, do you have a recommendation from isolation that you've been loving?
There are books that will be really relevant to your readers who are either planning on having a baby, have a baby, or are in fact a parent.
Okay.
But I feel like they're... Okay, this one. Hypnobirthing. The Mongan Method. It's basically about how to give birth in a really beautiful and calm way. It doesn't matter whether you're having a C-section or wanting to have a home birth. This book, like, absolutely changed my life.
Wow.
The breathing techniques that it teaches you have helped me with, like, ongoing anxiety and stress and have basically made me, I like to think, 90% calmer.
I have that, like, crazy, that fear that women have, like, that petrified fear of giving birth. I have it so bad.
So, same. Well, I did. So, I was, like, when I got pregnant, I was, like, I cannot give do birth. It. It has been my largest fear from being little. It was, like, ugh, I don't want to push a child out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was in so much denial that I didn't actually get a midwife until I was about 19 weeks or something. Which is really late. And then it just so happens that Lou, my partner, his mum is a midwife and is kind of, you know, she's for like a natural birth, which was like kind of stressful for me because I was like, book me in on a Thursday at 1 p.m. I'm having a C-section type thing.
Knock me out.
Which I'm not saying that that's bad. I'm just saying that for me, what this helped me with was removing fear. So like I went into my labor not being frightened at all. And it was just the most empowering experience of my life.
Wow.
When you mentioned yoga and how breathing has really helped you and being connected to your body, that's basically what this teaches.
Yeah.
Like hypnobirthing, I literally got myself in my labor into an extreme, like deep meditative state to a point where like, I know this is like a big claim, but like labor wasn't painful.
God.
Yeah, my mum did the same thing.
Yeah, I literally breathed him out.
Until I was breached. And then she was like, fucking get her out of here.
And like, that's the thing. This isn't like me being like, everybody could have a natural birth at home with no drugs. And like, I'm not trying to shame women. I feel like every option, it's not about what actually happens. It's about your headspace and feeling confident and empowered and not having fear. And like, I think if that's a gift that you can give yourself before your child comes along, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Love that. I love that recommendation. And I also love your disclaimer, because it's obviously necessary, but I find it annoying that it's necessary, because you're literally just saying something that worked for you, that it's a sensitive subject for me. So last week I was like, I'm taking this hormone supplement, which is really clearing my skin. And then heaps of people had a go at me for recommending something that, when people should go to the doctor and find out their own things. And I'm like, yes, obviously everyone can live for themselves and do all that. But I was just saying that this is just something that I like. Sorry.
Yeah, it is annoying having to put in a disclaimer. But I do feel like pregnancy and labor and like anything to do very with children subjects. Is like, it's so polarizing. So it's almost like religion.
Mm.
Well, it's because I find that as well. Like, I've always been very open since I was young about being like, I don't know. I've never felt maternal.
Yeah. Oh, and then I feel like
whenever I say that to anyone who, any of my friends who have kids or any, I don't know, I always feel like it's like an us and them thing. And I'm like, it's not an us and them thing. Like, I'm stoked for you and your kids, and they're fucking cute. And I love my godsons, and I love all these kids. And, you know, it just suddenly feels like this war. Like, it's just so touchy. It's as if people think you're kind of judging them for their life choices, when it's just like, we're all just,
it is what it is,
chugging,
it's not like,
along, we're all just so different. And I just want like 70 cats, and I don't think anyone else wants that, but I'm not angry at you guys.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, everybody should have 70 cats.
So okay, should we wrap this up?
Well, yeah, unless you want to hear one more book.
No, please,
come on.
This book is The Complete Buddhism for Mothers.
Great,
I love that. I wanted to be a Buddhist for ages, well, but then I read this. So there's like 12 rules you have to live by, and a couple of them were crazy.
Yeah, I'm not a Buddhist, but I found this book really, really, really nice. And if you're a mother, I highly recommend it. Shall I read the back?
Yes, go on. We don't want to break a tradition.
I won't be offended if you cut this out, okay?
All right.
But let me just... Parenthood can be a time of great inner turmoil for a woman. Yet parenting books invariably focus on nurturing children rather than mothers who struggle to raise them. These books are different. Together for the first time, these three best sellers, Buddhism for Mothers, Buddhism for Mothers of Young Children, and Buddhism for Mothers of School Children, explore the joy school of children. Being... Yeah, look how...
It's a thick old book. Look at it.
And there's three different versions.
Explore the joy of being with your children in the all-important present moment. In these books, mothers have found the inspiration to be more patient, loving, and attentive towards their children and other family members, other parents, and most of all, themselves.
Aww.
Love that.
That sounds wonderful.
Self-love, people.
Self-love, yes.
It's actually more important than anything.
Like, sorry, I'm just laughing at you reading the book.
How can you be a good friend, good lover, good mother, good anything if you don't love yourself?
Yeah.
Or know how to look
after yourself. This is what my white girl tattoo says, Georgia. It says, love yourself first in Arabic.
I love it.
Selena Gomez has the same
one. It's a great message to, you know, if there's one message, it's that.
Yeah, I agree.
It'll get you through.
It's like
everything.
On RuPaul's Drag Race, he says it's like how you have to put your... Is he just going to exit this conversation? You have to put on your life mask in a plane emergency before you can tend to others. So you got to have your own oxygen flow going before you can help other people.
It's so true.
I love this conversation.
I hope same. I haven't been too boring.
No,
you've been great, Georgia. Shall we wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up. Thank you so much for coming on. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
It was so nice to see you both and to have a conversation, not with Earl or Lewis or Ollie, my stinky dog.
Stinky, snory dog.
My snory, stinky dog. Take care.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks, George. We'll speak to you soon.
Yeah, talk soon, ladies. Love you.
Bye.
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 Okay, I think it's all good now.
Yay.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us.
Are you Kiwi?
Yeah, I'm home in New Zealand at the moment, and it's like
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's so nice because we both live in London together, but I basically bailed when all this coronavirus stuff happened.
I think that's possibly quite smart. Grace, are you in Sydney or are you in London?
I'm in London, yeah. We just got here in like December. The problem was that like my boyfriend's family all live in Sydney and my family all live in Perth. So we were like, should we go back? If we go back, where will we go? And then we're like, fuck it, we'll just ride it out. But it's actually honestly been okay, touch wood, like not okay for the health workers and stuff, but like day to day it's been okay.
Yeah, I was actually speaking to one of my friends in London this morning and she was like, so what's the mortality rate in like Australia? Like what, how many people have died? Like what, like 20 something thousand in UK? And I was like, oh, 71. And she was like, do you mean 771? I was like, no, literally 71 people. Like that's it.
It's like, in Australia?
Yeah, only 71.
That's like, so good.
I know. I'm like,
it's amazing. Yeah.
It feels like, it feels a bit bizarre. Like it's like, I feel like obviously like, I don't know, we've had like a few things in our favor in terms of weather and like, you know, like not a high density population, but it's also just like really weird to kind of feel like we're fluking it, you know?
Yeah, totally. And my one of my best friends is a nurse and she was saying that like weirdly, because they put off all these non-essential surgeries, nurses have like less to do than ever in Australia at the moment because they were expecting this influx and it just hasn't happened.
Yeah, it hasn't happened. And also they also let all these nurses go from private hospitals that were mainly elective surgeries. So it's actually like a lot of the healthcare workers aren't even like that busy. It's very, very weird. But they're apparently bringing back elective surgeries next week. So things might.
Right. But yeah, so I guess to start with, like, firstly, how are you finding isolation, which is like the big question? And secondly, is there something you've been reading or watching that has been helping get you through?
I mean, I feel like I'm really, really lucky in isolation because I have a car and I live near the ocean. So I've still been able to like go for a drive without, you know, by myself, without going on public transport and risking like infecting anyone or being infected and like go for a swim. I mean, I know it was technically illegal to swim. Well, it was kind of unclear. They said that the beaches were closed, but swimming counts as exercise. So it was like, if I run across the beach really fast and get in the water is what I'm doing.
That's fine.
Yeah. That's what happened. Yeah. That's literally the same in New Zealand. I was like, I just want to fucking jump in for 2 seconds. And I'm in this tiny town. And my friend who I'm staying with was like, seriously, the town Facebook group will fucking go bananas. If you put one foot in the water, there was a post on the Facebook group of some woman going, who stole my bananas? And then someone was like, they were in the community garden. And then she like lost her shit over someone stealing her bananas, Grace.
That's crazy.
That's like, but that's what community Facebooks are like. Like I come from like a country town and like I'm in the community Facebook for my country town. And there was one the other day about this man who like glued a gnome to a rock and then someone took the gnome off the rock and put it somewhere else. And he did this full post. And at the end, he was like, people who touch the gnomes don't deserve to live in Bellingen. They don't deserve to visit Bellingen. And I'm like, what is this like arbitrary thing that like you cannot live in this town if you touch gnomes? Like,
who touched the gnome?
But yeah, lockdown's been okay, actually. I haven't like, I mean, I obviously like really miss my friends and I'm like stressed about the state of the world as like a, you know, like, but like for me personally, like it hasn't.
I feel the same.
Actually, been too bad. And I don't also feel like it's like appropriate to kind of like center yourself as like having a really rough time if like actually by comparison to a lot of people you're like fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Because there's been like a we're all in this together vibe, and it just sometimes feels a bit like because it's it's not really that, yeah.
Well, it's not, we're not all equally in it together, really. Like, it's like people are in completely different circumstances. Like, some people are, yeah, anyway. So, but yeah, it's been fine.
We wanted to introduce, obviously, you and your, like, what you do and your activism, and I mean, I don't know if you would necessarily use that term, but I thought I might just quickly explain the first, and I think maybe the only time I've met you, was at a house party in Annandale, and I'd been talking to you for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then you were like, I gotta go be interviewed by the BBC for their live radio show. And I was like, what the fuck, because I think I was like 23. It was so impressive. And you were talking about how you had started this movement which had gone completely viral, and I wondered if you minded explaining that and explaining how you kind of blew up on the world stage at that time.
Yeah, so that kind of basically what happened. I think I was like 20, yeah, I was 21. And I read this Mamma Mia article, and Mamma Mia, I guess, is like, for people who don't know, it's kind of like light sort of like mainstream feminism, like feminism sort of like accessible to people, but like a lot of it is like really, I'm not a fan of. Anyway, they wrote this article, an anti-sex work article that was like talking about how, like, you know, everyone imagines that Julia Roberts from Pretty Woman is the like face of prostitution, but actually the face of prostitution is this like drug addicted, like beaten up woman lying in a gutter, and that women were being enticed into like sex work by watching Pretty Woman.
What? When has that, like, Pretty Woman? Sorry, that just surprised me so much.
I know, like, I know.
It's so offensive, like, as well, yeah.
Yeah.
I also, like, she doesn't make that much money in Pretty Woman. Like, she actually ends up being like kind of rescued by like a man who's in love with her. So I feel like it's not, I don't know, I don't feel like you would watch that and be like, oh, this looks like a great like career move. Like,
yeah, never have I ever, like, that's like, I'm obsessed with Julia Roberts. I was like, wait a minute, Julia's being brought into this.
I know, Julia's being brought into it, yeah. And then basically what happened was I wrote a response to it on my Instagram at the time, and I said like something like, I can't exactly remember what it was, but something like, there's like no one face of prostitution. There's like a myriad, and people like exist between the sort of like high end, like escort, like kind of thing, that like luxury escort that people imagine, and then like the completely passive, taken advantage of, like victim. Like, most people exist somewhere between those. And I hashtagged it, like, and I said, oh, here's like my, like, I'm one face of prostitution amongst like many. And I hashtagged it faces of prostitution, and the hashtag went viral. I think for a few reasons, like, firstly, because, I mean, like, sex work is such like a salacious and like contentious topic anyway, but like, I think also it allowed a lot of sex workers internationally to mobilize using social media, effectively. Not that they hadn't been before, like, I don't want to say like I began that, but I think perhaps a viral hashtag hadn't been used in that way before to connect, sex workers globally. But yeah, it was also just about like, you know, like, I feel like in films and things, like, usually sex workers are nameless and they're just kind of bodies. Like, they might be like a murdered worker in a TV show or whatever, and we're never really focused on as like humans and individuals. And that was like the kind of the thing behind the faces.
And that's such cool. Yeah. And that's such a, especially on your Instagram, you're such a beautiful writer, and you write so eloquently, and you're a feminist and an activist, and the way that you write about your work, I think, does offer, it's like what you're doing isn't kind of, I don't know how to frame this properly, but it's like, it feels radical because we've been given such a singular narrative about what sex work looks like, when obviously so many sex workers are eloquent and are extremely well written and are articulate and are feminist, but because we aren't given that representation, it feels completely radical to see that. And is that kind of something that you felt in how people respond to you?
Totally. But I feel like another important thing is that, like, I shouldn't be given, like, I shouldn't be accepted as a sex worker because I'm eloquent and a feminist and things like there are plenty of sex who aren't eloquent and feminist. And, like, I feel like one thing I always say is that, like, you know, we don't deserve human rights because we're respectable. Like, we deserve human rights because we're human. So, like, I do think people, like, respond to me because I can get, like, complex topics across in, like, a simple way that, like, is relatable for people. But, like, I don't want people to accept me at the expense of other sex workers. Do you know what I mean? Like, her work's okay because, like, she's this and that and she's intelligent, blah, blah, blah. But, like, you know what I mean?
I loved your TED Talk so much. I thought you were incredible and you got so many points across. And for someone who was worried about a video call, you did bloody well.
Oh, thank you. I actually have a really funny story about that if you want like a side story.
Oh,
to that.
Please.
Yes, please.
So like they had that day when I did it, they didn't have any like their headsets or whatever they're called were like for men, even though most of the speakers that day were women. So when they put it on me, it was like way too big for me, but it was like they tried to make it work. And when I went out on stage, I flicked my hair because like I often flick my hair and I flicked the headset off. So like the first, I ended up just like kind of speaking without like audio. So that like the video you actually see is like me filmed later in the day with no audience. And then they cut it like with the audience to try and like I'd spoken.
Oh my God.
The sound's fucked up. But the funny thing is that when they were like fixing me up to speak later to no audience and like pretend that I was speaking to an audience, they were doing a sound check. And the woman was like, okay, like, can you count to like 10? And I counted to 10. And she was like, can you say 16? And I said 16. And she's like, there's still a bit of feedback on those S's. And I was like, oh, that's actually my lisp.
Like, my friend I live with right now has like the biggest lisp ever. And his name is Stawny. And it's just the cutest thing ever.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I've always found it cruel that the word lisp like makes you lisp if you have a lisp.
Yes.
Yeah. I asked for the footage of that as like a blooper, but Ted wouldn't give it to me.
Yeah. You literally want that footage of you whacking the headset. Did you whack it off?
I flicked it and then couldn't get it back on properly. Yeah. It was like kind of partly around my neck. Anyway.
I kind of wanted to ask, so I don't want to sound, what's the word? Uninformed, but I don't actually know all that much about sex work, and I think that probably a lot of people who listen to the podcast don't either. I didn't even know until I was watching your TED talk that New Zealand was the first country in the world to decriminalize sex work.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted to know, is the biggest thing that sex workers globally, in your opinion, are fighting for, is for it to be decriminalized everywhere? And what would that kind of do? Why is it so important? And what would that do for sex workers?
I should just quickly note that New Zealand, unfortunately, doesn't have full decrim. They don't actually allow migrant sex workers, which is like quite a contentious.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. But otherwise they have decrim. That's like one flaw in their system.
Yeah.
So decrim is obviously like a huge, I feel like this is like such a big topic to get into. There's actually like a really excellent TED talk by a sex worker called Juno Mack about why decrim best policy for sex work. And there's also like a really excellent book that I recommend called Revolting Prostitutes, which goes into the different legal frameworks that exist around the world and explain why. But like a basic overview is so a lot of people, for example, use legalize, and they'll say like legalize prostitution. But I think because people get confused with like the legalized marijuana movement, and they're like legalization must be the best thing. But the reason why decrim is the best thing is because with legalization, it basically allows for places that have legalization to say this is legal, this isn't, and have sort of like gray areas of, so for example, in Victoria they have a legalization model. It's legal to work in a brothel, but it's only legal to work privately if you're registered, which is like obviously a problem, because like registering sex workers but not people in other industries, like those their personal details
out
there, and they can get stigma for being a sex worker, all that kind of thing. In other places, like a legalization model could be that it's legal to work privately but illegal to work with someone else. And so it basically leaves all of these kind of like hoops in which like sex workers can be caught in, and also creates a hierarchy system in which some sex workers are working legally and some are working illegally. And often the ones who end up working illegally are the ones with less resources. And the reason why decrim is important is because it decriminalizes anything relating to sex work. So even if you're, well, basically the reason why it's completely reductive to criminalize sex workers is because so often sex workers are doing it because they don't have other financial avenues. They might be like working class, they might be a single mother, they might be a black trans woman, and like putting someone in jail because they're poor and need to do sex work is just not effective for actually getting them out of sex work. It just keeps them in that sort of cycle of poverty.
But
it's like such a
huge thing. Yeah, because I saw it. Yeah. Well, I just saw so much about it last year, but I think that was because there was a huge debate in the States because of...
Yeah, and I think they were talking about decriminalizing sex work in maybe New York or something. And like, so in America, it's completely illegal except for Nevada, which has a legalization model. So it means that you can work in brothels, but no other way. Yeah.
What would be like one of the main things you would want to communicate to people to kind of help them understand sex work, or like the biggest misconception you think people have about it?
Biggest misconception people have. One of the things that bothers me is that people always want you to be, okay, so they're ready to support you if they think you're entirely happy in the work and you love your work, right? Whereas like, I don't think like empowerment or happiness should be a prerequisite for being allowed to work. Do you know what I mean? Like, no one's asking someone in a bank job, like, do you love your job every day? If you don't love it every day, then your job should be illegal. So that's something that's frustrates me. You kind of have to perform a kind of gleefulness about your job, which you may not feel. And I personally like go against that. Like, I always deliberately talk about the bad aspects of the job too, like sexual assault or like burnout, you know, the emotional toll and things like that, because I think that people accepting something only on the basis of it as a like sort of romantic glamorizing, that's not real acceptance, you know? Like, I think that people should support sex workers regardless of how we feel about our jobs, you know?
Yeah, that's something I was thinking about as well, because it's like, I feel like it happens to a lot of things in like feminism and feminist conversation where things get kind of like dressed up or dressed down to a point where they feel palatable and consumable and sugary and okay. And if it's like framed that way, then we're okay with it. And then that just becomes kind of difficult or problematic, because then it's like, well, that's kind of being deliberately unnuanced, or it's kind of deliberately ignoring the reality of the situation just so everyone can smile and feel okay about it.
Exactly. And like, life is complicated. Like, you're going to have complex feelings towards things, and like, that's okay. Like, we should be able to have space.
One thing I wanted to ask was, obviously, that there's a huge amount of job anxiety at this time for everyone. People are being furloughed, or people are losing their jobs, or people are losing work. How has the lockdown affected you in terms of work, and do you feel like there are maybe is there something to do with how the government is organizing bailouts that is not including sex workers?
Yeah, so I mean, I lost my work when the brothels closed in New South Wales, and that was really stressful. But I'm luckily in a position where I can do online work because like, I'm face out, so I've been like selling videos and content and stuff on OnlyFans. A lot of sex workers wouldn't be able to do that, whether because they can't, there might be a single mom and they don't want to lose custody of their children or something like that, and so they can't have, it would be too risky for them to have, you know, content online, or maybe they don't have access to the internet or whatever. So for a lot of sex workers, unfortunately, that transfer isn't possible. And also, like, the internet is flooded right now with so many sex workers trying to survive, and also the online sex workers that already existed there. And it can be complicated for sex workers to get on Centrelink because it can be hard to prove income and hard to prove loss of income. And also sometimes we sort of fall in this like weird area of like, are we independent contractors or are we employees? Like, it's all just like a bit weird. Also, there are plenty of sex workers who are migrants and who wouldn't be able to get Centrelink for that reason. In Australia though, like, we are better set up than like a lot of other places, because for example in New York, they're not even giving coronavirus support to anyone who works in any sex industry, like including anyone who like works at a sex shop or works in porn or whatever. So there are lots of places where like you're excluded from any sort of aid if you're in the sex industry. There has been some fucked things in Australia though, in terms of for example, the first business that was fined in Australia for not listening to lockdowns was a massage parlor, and the three workers that were on that day were fined $1,000 each, which I just find so ridiculous, because when you think about these women who like went to work probably like scared, knowing they were breaking the law, like they were probably so in need of money to do that, so to like
find them on top of that is just like, I think, the most awful thing. Like, give them other avenues, like help them get on Centrelink. Like, and I also think that it's not a coincidence that a massage parlor was targeted as the first place to be fined when a lot of businesses weren't listening to the rules. I think that they chose a massage parlor because there's the kind of like age old, like, prejudice in people's minds about like sex work being dirty and it being, you know, a vector for disease and things like that. So I feel like that's why that was targeted. Victoria, unfortunately, has brought in like some really anti-sex work legislation in the wake of coronavirus. They have now, so like in New South Wales, you get like $1,000 fine if you like leave the house for like not a valid reason or whatever. So like in New South Wales, if I decided to meet up with a client, I would risk $1,000 fine like anyone else, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in Victoria, they've brought in a sex work specific fine. If you do a booking in Victoria with a client, you are fined $20,000.
Oh my God.
Jesus.
Yeah, which is just so.
And that's crazy as well. I know it's a completely different thing, but aren't people allowed to, isn't it a thing in Australia where you're allowed to see your partners, or if you're dating someone, yes, you're allowed to see them even if you don't live in the same place?
Yeah, so it's really weird because you could fully, I feel like if it was maybe a regular client that you saw all the time,
yeah,
argue that it was care-based or it was some sort of like ongoing relationship. But I know the courts would look down upon it because of the exchange of money, which is like, yeah, it's all really fucked.
And also, like, I can imagine as the virus started, there obviously would have been a lot of anxiety anyway, because it's such a body-to-body work. There's people that are coming in and out. Like, you would obviously have anxiety about the virus, but then the added anxiety of feeling like you were going to be targeted and fined to do your job, it would just compound on top of everything. Fully. Yeah.
I mean, mind you, though, I know that some people are freaking out about the virus, and I work at a mainly Asian brothel, and I can say that it fucking dropped off from January. As soon as coronavirus started happening in China, so many clients weren't coming in because most of the girls working there are Chinese,
right,
and they like had this idea that they were more likely to have coronavirus, which is just ridiculous because they're living in Australia. Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, but I do know a lot of sex workers that were kind of panicking about catching coronavirus. I personally wasn't. I feel like we are at risk of contracting a lot of things at work, and I personally would be more concerned about catching an STI that would make it illegal for me to work in future, rather than like coronavirus. But that's just me personally. I feel like there are body risks in sex work that always exist. Like, coronavirus was like not a new fear for me, you know. Like,
well, we've talked a lot about your work. Is there anything that you would, I know this must be frustrating because it's like this conversation is so important to have, and we want people to hear it and we want to be having it, but it must also get exhausted because it's like, who else in the world is like so like defined by their job, you know what I mean? Like, and always asked, yeah, about their job. Yeah, like, yeah. I imagine that dichotomy must get a bit annoying sometimes.
Well, I mean, I feel like it's important to use like whatever platform I can to speak about it because like people tend to be so ill-informed on it. But yeah, at the same time, I'm also like, I am more than a sex worker. Sorry. In terms of, I think you asked earlier, what have I read or watched in lockdown? I did read a really good book this week called In the Dream House, which I highly recommend, which was a autobiography by an American woman whose name I've forgotten, sorry. But it's all about her experience in a like queer relationship with another woman and the domestic violence that occurred in that relationship. And it was...
I'm sorry to interrupt. I feel like I might have listened to her speaking on a podcast about it.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Did it come out recently?
Yeah, maybe like end of last year or something. And it's,
yeah. Yeah, I listened to her speak about it. She like read a passage from it or something.
Yeah. Well, it was really good, especially because I feel like there's so little. I mean, I've been in an abusive relationship with a woman and I've found so few things like texts that deal with domestic violence and queer relationships. I really enjoyed it. Plus it's like beautifully written. And it's one of those books where you can like read like a few pages and then put it down. So it's kind of like, I feel like perfect in lockdown when your attention span is maybe like easily distracted.
It seems quite a dark read though. Like, do you find that impacts for me, in lockdown, I've been trying to kind of keep things very lowbrow and been watching like crappy Netflix shows, because if I read something like that that's too intense, it affects my mood. Does that happen to you or not really?
No, not really. I feel like any world that I can escape into is like a distraction for me right now. Like, it's kind of cathartic to read things that are really emotional.
Yeah, my friend's the same.
Okay, well, thank you so much for chatting to us and for making it through the Zoom anxiety for our sake.
Yeah, thank you so much, Tilly.
It was fine. Have a lovely rest of your day, guys.
Yeah, you too.
I don't know who you Zoom, so you guys can hang up, right?
Yeah. Hello.
Hello. I'm always shocked when Zoom works. I feel like it never works.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you, ladies? Good morning, I guess. Are you guys just waking up?
Good morning and good evening. You've got us on either side of the spectrum.
Oh, cool.
I have a cocktail.
Great. Cheers. I'm in my shirt that I've been wearing for the last 4 days. But I did put dry shampoo in for you ladies, so.
I was going to say the hair's looking fresh.
Thank you. A little dry shampoo. I've been cutting it myself.
Have you? Grace has been really seriously considering getting an isolation fringe.
Yeah, so you have like a more rounder face and blonde hair, and you've got the bangs and they work on
you.
My, so this might be the push that I needed.
I think you should go for it. Honestly, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. I will say I don't do anything to my hair like daily. I just kind of wake up and wing it. And bangs are a pain in the ass. Like you wake up every day and your hair is like something about Mary when she has the jizz in her hair and it's like standing up. But a little brush, a little dry shampoo.
And you have to cut it yourself because I feel like constantly going to the hairdresser is just not feasible.
And that's the thing. It grows so quickly because it's such fresh hair up here that it's like I have to do it once a week. But my issue is I like smoke weed and then I'm like, I'm going to cut it now. And then
I'm going to cut my bangs.
Just don't do it. Don't do it. Yeah. But luckily it's been okay. I figured it out.
We wanted to tell you that we are big fans of the cooking show.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, ladies. I know it's a bit, it's a bit of a interesting thing. It kind of came out of nowhere. I've just always wanted to kind of be like a TV personality, and I'm not a cook by any means. Like I didn't go to culinary school. I just love cooking and I love having people over, and my girlfriends just finally one day were like, okay, enough of talk. Like, let's shoot it. What are you doing tomorrow? We literally just like set up a camera and shot it.
It's great because I feel like when people make food, they're running like a commentary of what they would say if they were on a cooking show in their head. So the fact that you've executed that is very inspirational.
Thank you. And it's so funny. When I was a kid, I'm dying to find this footage, but this is true. I would stand in the kitchen and regardless of what I was making, if it was a bowl of cereal or like a box of mac and cheese, I would stand in there and talk to myself and be like, welcome to Cooking with Isabella. Today, I'm going to show you how to make my favorite milk and cookies or whatever. It was just like
Cocoa Pops.
Yeah, exactly. Now I have my own cooking show. My mom was probably just like, she did that shit. I did it. I made it, Mom.
I made your cauliflower tacos.
You did?
I made your pasta.
Oh, good. That makes me so happy.
I was watching your live.
I can send you some photos.
Yeah, I was watching your live, but it was like, I think like 1 p.m. here. And I was like, God, I just want to get involved with cooking dinner, but it just seems outrageous.
I'm gonna keep doing it every week. It's been holding me accountable, which has been good. Like having people, even if it's just like 3 friends of mine, which it is, that rely on me to have dinner for them planned on Wednesday nights. Like it gives me something to do, which has been great. I have been a vegetarian my whole life by choice. I think I started when I was about 6 or 7. And I just thought that there was a huge hole in the market for like approachable, fun, easy vegetarian cooking, especially as a woman host. It's always like, my husband loves when I make him these, you know, cauliflower wings on game night. And it's like, or these ingredients are like a kumquat from Lebanon that you can't fucking find. Like, I want to be able to go to my bodega here in Brooklyn and find ingredients and make a plant-based meal, you know, and not have it be this like pretentious, unapproachable
thing. What I love about it is because I've been a vegetarian since I was 6 or 7 too. I can't remember if we've discussed this, but I'm not a very good cook and I don't really like cooking, but I think the reason I don't like cooking is I'm really, really impatient, and I find reading recipes quite overwhelming. And so yeah. What I've loved about yours is it's just like chill, very easy, but healthy and vegetarian. And I'm like, okay, I can actually do this. Because usually I'll just literally be like, I can't do it. And I go to a supermarket and I get really overwhelmed really easily. And so, yeah. And now in quarantine, I'm like having to fend for myself because I literally will rely on takeaways all the time. It's so bad.
Yeah. And you can't really do that these days, you know.
There's nothing in New Zealand. Like, New Zealand's fully shut down. You can't even get any, like, delivery food or any coffee or anything. It's, like, fully shut. We figured out yesterday that you can order in advance from the alcohol store, from, like, the liquor store and pick it up outside because we were like, we've run out of tequila.
And that would be terrible to not have booze through this. I mean, at first I was like, I can't believe liquor stores in New York, you can't buy wine or booze from the grocery stores. And I'm from Chicago. It's obviously a state thing in the US. It varies by state, but I'm always used to like going and getting a bottle of wine at Whole Foods when I'm grocery shopping. You can't do that here. You have to have a liquor store, but they're considering liquor stores to be essential business here, which I agree. I was kind of at first like this seems like they're enabling like my drinking habits. Not that I have one, but a couple glasses of wine a night, whatever. But now I'm
four margaritas a night, whatever.
Yeah, a couple of benders a week. No, I'm kidding. But I'm so grateful that they're open. Bless them, putting their lives at risk. Make sure we can all just have a bloody glass of wine or three every night.
How have you been surviving isolation, and what's New York been like? Well, how long have you lived in New York?
I've been here for a little over 8 years now. Mm-hmm. Or I guess, yeah, I moved in 2012 in the summer. So this will be my eighth summer. And, you know, it's kind of like being anywhere else. I'm not leaving my house. So whether I'm quarantined at my mom's house in Chicago or here, I'm just not leaving at all. But it has definitely been very surreal. Every night at 7 p.m., people clap and cheer for the first frontline healthcare workers, which is amazing. But it's definitely sad. It's been really hard as a freelancer. Obviously, like, it's not that different from my daily life anyway. I spend a lot of time waiting for jobs and trying to keep myself busy. So the only difference is that there is no prospect for work, and I don't know if my industry will ever go back to the way it was. Like, we're so sensitive to human interaction and touch now that I can't imagine a makeup artist like touching my face or breathing in my face and putting moisturizer on me. Like, it just seems like a total breach of my personal space and bubble, but we have to go back somehow. In terms of like how I'm getting through this, I'm just taking it one day at a time. You know what I mean? Every day is I have different feelings waking up. Like I said, the live weekly cooking on Wednesday nights has given me something to look forward to, which I feel a lot of people are lacking during this time. I need to exercise daily, whether it's stretching. I love to stretch at night. I've been getting these bursts of energy at like 8 p.m. where I'm like, I need to stretch my limbs. So I've been doing that. But then I have weeks where I fall off and don't exercise at all. Cooking every meal. Whatever it is, even if it's just egg tacos. My favorite breakfast is like egg tacos, which are just scrambled eggs and tortillas with like caramel.
I did your trick with the tortillas on the open flame, and it's like really changes the game. Yeah. I was just cooking them on the open flame and eating them plain like an animal, which is they tasted so much better.
So much better. Like, what were you doing before? Just raw tortillas?
Putting them in the oven to warm up.
Got it. Which
I put them in a pan usually.
Got it.
To warm them.
Yeah, or a pan. But on the open flame, and I was like roasting a fucking large jalapeno pepper on the open flame, and Zach was like, when did Alison Roman move in?
Holy shit. This is big coming from Grace.
I want to do an episode about pantry building because I know most people are doing like weekly shops. Like, that's what we're doing. We just kind of go once to the shop. And for someone like you who's saying, you know, recipe reading can be so overwhelming with all the ingredients. And I feel that, like, I don't read recipes, you know, I'm just off the cuff with my recipes. But if you have these simple ingredients in your house always, like these staple spices and vegetable stock, olive oil, these vinegars, you buy them once, you spend the money once, and then you can make a whole, you know.
I feel like people would fully pay for that if you were just like, okay, cool, so when you go to the supermarket this week, grab all of this, and then you'll have all the ingredients for these five meals, and you can just like mix and match whatever. And also, another thing I was thinking is that would be so amazing for me would literally be if I could send someone a photo of my pantry, and they say, okay, you could make this or this tonight.
That's such a good idea.
Because when I look in the pantry, literally it can be completely full, and I'm like, there's nothing here, I'm gonna die of hunger.
Wow, that's such an interesting thought. Have you ever watched the show Chopped?
No.
It's like a big cooking show here. It's a cooking competition, and it's like four chefs get a mystery box of ingredients, and they all have the same ingredients, but they like open it up.
It's like MasterChef.
It is.
It's like the MasterChef. Yeah, it's my favorite.
Do you know MasterChef?
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Okay. All the cooking shows, for the record, yeah. I'm obsessed. But they would have been inspired from the show Chopped. It's been on forever. And sometimes the ingredients are like jelly beans, 3-day-old pad thai, and it's like crazy shit, and they have to make these meals. But it's really helped me be like, oh, what can I make with these ingredients? But that's just such an interesting thought. I'm all about alternative sources.
Do it for me.
All about generating income somehow. I did these plant videos where I showed people like how to propagate a plant, and I got so much great feedback. Everyone was like, look, I did it, and great. And at the bottom of the post, I was like, feel free to send a donation via my Venmo.
Yes.
And not a single person like could send me even a dollar. I was like, whatever, I'm happy to give that.
But this is what we need to figure out now, because it's so complicated, because in the past, like, this sounds kind of silly, and especially considering me and Izzy work in magazines, but it's hard for us who's only ever worked in magazines when there's been digital to imagine a time where like the only way you could get any content you wanted was to pay for it. And now we've completely switched where no one thinks they should have to pay for anything that's useful to them. And it's like getting people in the mindset of putting money towards something that will benefit them and that they enjoy when they haven't had to pay for it in the past is so hard.
Absolutely. And I would say this pandemic, you know, people have been offering their services, whether it's exercise classes or, you know, plant services, therapy, anything that they can offer, yoga, meditation. There's so much competition. Like, why would they pay for your service specifically when there's 150 other people doing it for free? So it is challenging. And to be honest, like, I've done a couple workouts and, you know, sent $5 or $10, and then I've done a workout and not sent anything. And just because you forget, or, you know, I don't know, I need to be better at it, but it is an adjustment for sure. Also, a big reason for doing my show was sustainability purposes. Like, I want to show people that you can cut meat and dairy out of your diet and still eat really well. And so I think that coming out of this, I hope that we have a little bit more awareness for how we spend our money and who we support. And, you know, yeah, I think our voices are going a lot further than they ever have. It's weird that I feel like I've been more social during this time in terms of like forming real connections with people. Because it's one thing to like go out and meet a group for drinks and like get wasted and have a night out, which is what, you know, you do with your girlfriends usually. But now it's like you're staring at a screen and you're forced to actually talk to each other, you know, or you lose connection with someone because you don't reach out, and then life goes on and you separate, which is fine. But I feel like I have been keeping really close connections with like my close friends and my family, and I really know what's going on in their lives, which is not much.
Same. I'm like, I'm loving
like, oh, nothing.
Not,
me too.
Yeah, I'm loving just not having anywhere to be or any commitments to make. Yeah. I'm just like, God, I'm literally not even missing yet going out and drinking with heaps of people. I'm just like, I'm missing like going out for a nice dinner with a bunch of my girlfriends.
Or like meeting your best friend for brunch.
Yeah.
Having a couple mimosas. I miss a mani-pedi more than anything in the fucking world. Like, I am so out here.
It took me 1 month to scrape the shit off.
I've got these fucking brunette roots. Shellac, like, it's not cute.
I boxed dyed my hair.
You did?
Like, fuck it. Yeah. Well, I've brunette anyway, and my hair is literally this dark.
I was actually on one of the hair boxes 1 year, like, so long ago. They're still using my image, which is so frustrating because I haven't been paid in like 6 years for it, and they just claim that there's like
Start a campaign against them.
GoFundMe page. Like, I need money for lawyers to take down. Okay, so
they can afford it.
They can afford it. They're so petty. I'm hoping no one's listening because, you know, obviously I'd love to work with them again and get money. But yeah, like.
We can beep their name out. Do you have a recommendation from quarantine, either a book or a movie or a podcast or something that you feel like people might enjoy?
God, you know, I'm terrible because I love to just turn my brain off at the end of the day and like watch some mindless TV, much like the Kardashians. But I have just discovered 90 Day Fiancé.
Oh, this sounds extremely
up our alley. Okay,
it's terrible. Like, I've been watching the before the 90 days. So it's basically a show about an American. So they'll be featuring like 10 different Americans. And sometimes they're like fat, ugly, kind of rich guys. And then sometimes they're just like stupid, really ignorant, like guys that are just sending money to these like Ukrainian girls that are just going out and getting like,
oh my God.
Stop. It's ridiculous. But the goal is for the non-Americans to get a marriage visa and move to the U.S. So they have 90 days. Oh my
God, I need to go on this.
You guys,
this is not where I was expecting this to go.
It is hilarious. Oh my God, watch 10 hours of your life go by in an instant. Like, my boyfriend and I just sit here and we're just in awe by like the mere just like ignorance that these people have. It's hilarious. It's like, yeah, this one girl, oh my God, I don't even want to get into it because I'm embarrassed that I love it so much. But anyway, it's a wormhole. There's before the 90 days, there's the actual 90 days, and then there's after. They're just raking the money in.
I'm so keen.
Other than that, I just discovered this new workout. It's a dance class. I shouldn't even call it a workout. By this guy called Ryan Heffington. Have you heard of him?
No.
He's seen like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, the new seasons, like the new cast.
Yeah.
So this guy looks and has the energy of Jonathan. He's like very eccentric, gay, like out here, but he's an amazing dancer and choreographer. So I tried it for the first time today and it's incredible. There was like over 4,000 people tuned into this live dance class and he's sitting here and he's like dripping sweat and he's playing like all female artists and he's like, okay, and we're going to do the magic pony dance and he's like galloping and then he's like, no, twirl. And he's like, work the cape. And like, very spiritual. And it's my new regime. I think I'm going to try and do it like as often as I can. It was incredible. What a release. Yes, it's a workout, but it's been really hard for me to like motivate myself to work out. It's much easier when you're like having fun, dancing, listening to good music. His vibe is so uplifting.
That sounds very up your alley, Grace.
Yes. I had a similar like come to Jesus moment when I was doing a yoga video once and I just stopped doing it and I was like, I hate this. I don't know why I keep lying to myself. Like, I just don't like doing yoga. It's just boring. Yeah. And I was like, what do you actually like doing that gets your body moving? And I was like, dancing. So I just started YouTubing dance exercise videos. I ended up finding the most insane one. It's called Hip Hop Tabata.
Ooh.
And it's a great workout.
Wait, shut the fuck up. One of my girlfriends sent me this workout 30 minutes ago. I'm not even lying to you. Let me show you right now. She sent me a YouTube the Tabata dance class.
Yes. It's a great workout.
Hold on.
Is it Kiara Lachey?
Yes.
Yes.
Wow. The universe is so crazy. The universe.
It's aligned. Wow. She's just fun. And the dancers are ridiculous. And they're so embarrassing. And I told Izzy, I started putting blue tack over my webcam when I started doing them. So I was like, if there's any way that some sort of Ukrainian hacker is like linked going into my computer, the only blackmail they'll get is me doing this dance video.
You're like applying for a visa in the US and they're like, we've seen you dance.
And
absolutely not. Some incriminating evidence has come in, and no. But yeah, it's fun. Exercise should be fun. It's a myth that you should suffer through every minute.
Yeah, and I just have, I mean, there's always this pressure to get into meditation. You know, there's like this woken population of people that are like, their solution for everything is to start meditating daily. And that's great. And I'm not saying it, I'm sure there's incredible benefits, and I have no doubt in my mind that I would love it, but I just can't get into it. Like, I have no problem not meditating and still taking a moment to breathe and feel gratitude and like know my surroundings and still reap the benefits. But maybe I just haven't found the right guide or program.
Yeah, me too.
No, and then I think I watched an interview. I'm like driving myself crazy now, racking my brain who to think it was. It was someone awesome. And she was like, I fucking hate meditation. You're allowed to hate meditation. It doesn't have to be like, you're not a bad person if you can't figure out how to meditate. Yeah. It doesn't mean that you don't take time to think about your intentions for the day. It doesn't mean that you're not like in tune with yourself spiritually. It doesn't mean that you're not thoughtful or mindful. It just means that that way of doing it might not be effective for you. And that's fine. I was like, that is so liberating, because we all sit and feel guilty that we don't meditate.
Absolutely. My therapist she's trying to get me into doing yoga more, but it's for the breathing to kind of calm my mind, the mindfulness vibe of it. And I've never been able to do meditation either, but like randomly last night, I could not sleep. And I remembered that she told me about the Calm app. And so I had it on my phone and I was like half asleep. And I think I fucking signed up and paid money. And then I pressed on this thing and it was Matthew McConaughey reading me a sleep book. And he literally read me a tale, and his voice put me to sleep.
Was he like, all right, time to close the
eyes? Yes, it was so soothing and amazing. And then I would find myself lying there thinking, who does Matthew McConaughey date? And I want it to be me.
He's like married, I think, and he has a bunch
he's
of
married
horses.
To this sexy woman called Camilla.
Yeah, that's a sexy name. You don't know any ugly Camillas.
No.
Yeah. Like, fuck it. Maybe Chalbella expands and starts meditating. Fuck it up. Maybe it's like I'm guiding people in meditation. It's like, let's go, bitches.
That's the kind of meditation I think a lot of women would resonate with.
Right.
I'm into like whatever you're selling me. I want you to start doing dance videos next.
You have a strong personal brand. You need to like exploit it. We need like the merch.
Yeah.
We need the different types of tutorials. Meditation app I'd get behind. It could be like an anti-meditation app.
I love it. I feel a little like cornered myself into this cooking thing, and it's like I'm not an expert, you know what I mean? I just really find cooking to be very therapeutic, and I just was like, fuck it, this is the easiest way to get into this right now. But I do want to branch out, and I do have all these ideas for the show that are kind of segments. You know, I go through phases where I'm super confident and I'm like, I'm gonna do content today, and then you have to like make it. But then you just have days where you're like, you literally just watch yourself on camera after making something and you're like, this is so embarrassing. Like, what am I
doing? That's how I feel all the time.
Everyone feels like that. When I listen to myself back when we're editing, I'm like, why do you ever open your mouth?
Yeah, I'm like, why the fuck do you think anyone cares about what you have to say? Like, you just get so in your own head.
Yeah. And it's just, you must think, like, I'm just ridiculous. And my neighbors, you know, I did that one opera video where I sang The Box.
I'm so obsessed with that.
That was...
And I was
amazing.
Like, then my neighbors must just think I'm insane. They're probably just, what is going on? You just hear 4 hours of me just like, no, and I'm not a singer. So it was just, you know, some people keep track of their life via journaling or writing movies, you know, writers and making music and poetry and all these things, painters. I just feel that a way that I've kind of looked back at my life is definitely like my Instagram feed. I hate that that's kind of the case, but our whole existence has moved on to electronics, you know, it's like the cloud. We don't have any tangible photographs anymore, memories. And it's like, if all I can do is create content, I'm happy to do that. And then I can look back in 10 years and know exactly where I was and what headspace I was in on that day, you know?
Same. And then I worry, like, I get so kind of, I mean, we've talked about this a million times on the podcast, but it's so annoying how kind of Instagram, especially for us, it needs to become more of a work thing. Like, it's like your personal brand, but for us, it's quite work focused. It's just so annoying because then I find myself deleting all of these fucking fun moments that I want to look back on in 10 years' time.
And I feel like Instagram's attempt to take away the like count is their way of expressing that Instagram has turned into this popularity contest, yeah, as opposed to like an expression of art and perspective. But it doesn't change, like, I could give a fuck less what people think about me, clearly. But when a post gets less likes, I definitely think about it, you know, or I definitely, yeah, feel like less, I don't know, less worthy or less, you know, it's less that like my self-worth has come down to, you know, not my self-worth, but like the interaction or lack thereof really does affect your perspective on your life. However, I think that for a long time, especially in the modeling world, I just felt disillusioned, or I'm sorry, what's the word? Like disenchanted by this whole Instagram world, because, you know, as a model on Instagram, you get very labeled as certain things. And I just feel that like, it's okay to fucking post content and love doing it and like make it your life. Like I would think that posting like isn't a job or isn't enough. Like I hated telling people that I was a model because I never thought that it was like a real worthy career. You know, I never thought that it was where my life would go. And then I fell into it and it was great and I'm very grateful. But I need to get that out of my head, that voice that tells me that like I need to get a real job and I need to grow up and get a real life. Like just keep busy doing whatever you love doing.
But something me and Izzy talked about as well, without getting to like conspiracy theory about it, but like the two jobs where women like really majorly earn more money than men are modeling and Instagram influencing. Like they're probably the only two jobs, right? And they're like the two jobs that people make out to be not serious or not real or not whatever. I think there's something to be said for like society wanting to undermine women owning their own earning power.
Yeah,
and you know what I mean? If you can earn your living from it, it's a fucking job. You should spend time on it and perfect it and make it exactly what you want and not feel embarrassed about it, because
yeah, and you can make a fucking killing from it. It's like, why would you not?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's amazing that I think women in general, like I am just at a point in my life where I'm like so supportive of my girlfriends and I'm so grateful for my support from my girlfriends that I'm like always reaching out. But it wasn't always the case. Like I would meet models all the time at events and I'm guilty of thinking like less of them or not taking them seriously. It's just something that I feel like we've just kind of always grown up thinking is that like models are dumb and they don't have a voice or they're annoying or, you know, whatever.
Oh, you just think there's not enough room for like,
there's enough room for lots everyone.
Of people. Exactly. You think there's, and there is, but you're made to feel like there isn't enough
and
room.
Also yeah. People are just kind of negative towards, I think, models because it's like, you just think they have it easy because they're just beautiful.
Yeah. And in many cases it is like, I was making good money and I would spend 90% of my time fucking around waiting for my next job to come in. And it's true. Like it is very easy. However, nothing in life is like given to you from nowhere. Like you have to work for it somehow.
Thank you so much for talking to us, Bella.
Of course. Thank yes, you so thank much for you. Including me, ladies. I love the dinner party series and I'm super honored to be a part of it.
As soon as we can, we're going to be over in the States for a
yay!
Bit.
Yay! So. Oh my God, amazing. Woo! So we're all going to
be seeing you.
Yes, we're going to have some drunken nights with some braiding, okay?
Yeah. Braiding, dancing, hip-hop Tabata, cooking.
Okay. Hip-hop Tabata, we'll all be experts.
Shaking our ass by then.
Yes.
Bye, baby.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.